Hi, everybody. Welcome home. Hopefully my slides will launch. I'm Amy Vollmer, and I've been here for this just finished my 25th year, so that's some sort of milestone. It's really a very special place to be. Oh, goody. So one of the things that I've been really involved in is promoting science literacy. Certainly in my class, in my classes that I teach, especially the microbiology class, I have students write for diverse audiences, not just for me. I think it's an important skill to have, and I think at a liberal arts college, where I'm the only microbiologist, I'm always speaking to people outside of my field. And I think we need to make sure that our students are just as comfortable speaking outside of their field as they become speaking technically within their field. And so I've engaged in a number of activities to increase science literacy and to encourage clear communication. My previous experiences, the other alternate titles for this slide would be Amy's Other Harebrained Ideas. I've invited faculty to join me in the lab. These are intrepid individuals who at the time were completely not funded because the foundation didn't exist yet and nobody would fund this crazy idea. But Philip Jefferson, in fact, was one of the intrepid first team of faculty to join me in my lab. I saw it as a way to increase communication between me and people who are not scientists. I learned the most because I learned about scientists' misconceptions and our miscommunications about science, but it also gave me a chance to work with my friends in a really collegial way. In fact, I've also been joined by deans, people from the Dean of Students office in my laboratory, and we've had a great time. I've also been invited as a full professor to be engaged in the lifelong studies program that Gil Rose has spearheaded for many years. And that is, 8 weeks out of the semester, 3 hours per week to engage adult learners. No grading, no papers, no tests. It's great. And I've really enjoyed that, and I thank Gil for giving me the opportunity. Galvanized by that, I've given lectures in other lifelong studies programs, including the one organized by alumna Diana Stevens at the University of Delaware. I've also, because of that, people in the audience invite me to come and speak to their Rotary clubs and to other interested groups. I think I must be getting older because lately the invitations have come from retirement communities, which I'm happy to visit. I'm very inspired by attentiveness to lifelong learning in those communities especially. The outcomes of these interactions have been incredibly positive. Further motivating me to promote science literacy, and as I said before, I'm the one who's learned the most from all of these experiences. So this new idea that I came up with was based on, is not original. There are things called science cafes that are popular in many urban areas. Philadelphia has a science cafe. We have some alumni who've been involved in a Seattle-based science cafe for many years. And so you appear in a pub or a diner. There's often a little chalkboard, and you give a little chalk talk about stem cells or climate change or whatever it is your area of expertise. It's not an intimidating classroom experience. It's very, you're wearing kind of casual pants and not your cap and gown. And so you're not intimidating to people, and it engages folks in conversation about that. So it takes a willingness to interact, and it takes clear communication skills. And so I was very inspired by reading about it. And so one of the crazy things I do sometimes is send an email to the provost and the president. And you know these emails, you don't really expect to get a response. You just kind of share an idea. And so I said, I've got this idea based on all these things. I'd like to recruit faculty to give a one-hour lecture, maybe even a half-hour lecture, about something they're interested in. I've heard from staff and alumni who say, I can't do the whole lifelong studies thing, Amy, I can't commit 8 weeks, I can't commit the tuition, but I'd still be really interested in learning kind of on a shorter term. So those were my rationale. I'm trying to increase ways to improve science literacy. I've seen staff members stop in our hallways and read the student research posters to try to figure out why we spend all of our summer here with our students and we don't go away like other people do. And so it was very clear to me that there was an interest on campus. So I explained to the provost and president more people might benefit from this, including people who speak about the science curriculum in admissions or development. trying to understand why the science faculty are in fact here all the summer, and extending the culture of research that we have so carefully cultivated in the natural sciences and engineering beyond our divisional boundaries to the entire campus. I said, you know, we have these wonderful faculty lunches, and we really do. In fact, we got to speak at a faculty lunch about our activities, but I often walk away from a faculty lunch where a faculty member has stood up and spoken about his or her interest to us and thinking to myself, wow, I really wish more people on the whole campus could have appreciated that. And in particular, there was a talk given by Rachel Mers, one of my very talented colleagues in biology, about climate change. And it was one of the clearest explanations of climate change I've ever heard, and I walked away from that saying, darn, you know, people on the staff would be interested in this too. How can we make this available? The best thing about these talks is they last about half an hour, and then there's another 15 minutes of question and answer, and it's just incredibly inspiring and invigorating to go to lunch and to come out saying, not only did I feed my body, I fed my brain. So I proposed to the provost and president, I would call it Second Tuesday Science Cafe. We could meet on the second Tuesday of each month. It would be over lunch. I even said, if you can't afford it, we can just have people bring their own lunch, brown bag it. A 30-minute talk, questions and answers. I'd like to get the speakers that I recruit paid $50 for their time. And I only wanted it to be open to staff, because I said the faculty already have lunch. So the response was unbelievable. I hit send, and within 2 hours, I got an enthusiastic reply from the provost. This almost never happens. Right? Not because he's not a positive person, but he's way busy. And this was not a priority, but evidently he was happy to support it. Within 24 hours, I heard back from Rebecca Chopp, which, I mean, she's not usually in my time zone, so I give her a little bit more time to respond, but really, she said, you know, Amy, I think this is something that the Institute for Liberal Arts, which has become the foundation, can support. And I said, what Institute for the Liberal Arts? It's kind of out of it. So it happened. We did make some changes. It didn't happen all year long, just during the academic year. Lunch was provided. Sandwiches, salad. It's wonderful. And the people I worked with forced me to invite faculty. The faculty already have a Wednesday lunch. They said, oh, Amy, if you don't invite the faculty, they'll be very upset. And there might be some non-science faculty who would really like to come to this. All right, fine. I wanted to invite staff and faculty instead of faculty and staff. So here's the lineup. I stuck my neck out first and spoke about bacteria. Then Lynn Storley Schofield, who's actually one of my former advisees, who's back on the faculty, talked about looking at statistics and the testing system that's involved in the primary and secondary schools in the state. Michael Brown from Eric's department in physics talked about the energy of the sun happening in his lab. That was really cool. And then Nick Kaplinski, already a star of Philip's talk, talked about hot plants. Some people came because they thought it was going to be about hot pants. But they stayed anyway, and what was really wonderful about this talk was the audience was full of people from the Scott Arboretum. Nick also did something very special at the end of that talk. In his acknowledgments, he not only thanked the students whose work he presented, but he thanked the people in facilities and grounds and environmental services and all the people who make working on this campus possible. And I thought that was incredibly gracious and incredibly accurate, because everybody contributes to our being able to host students in our laboratory. Here's some more of the speakers: Frank Durgan from psychology, Art McGarity from engineering, and Steve Wong from math and statistics covered topics as varied as perception, water quality, and the demise of the dinosaurs. I mean, where can you get a lineup like that? I was pleased to learn that the Institute at the time, which is now the foundation, gave me a renewal. Without my even having to ask for it. I should have played the lottery that day. And so, you know, when was the last time I was funded without asking? Never. I should not ask more often. And so we were graced by the following speakers last fall: Scott Gilbert, who is an emeritus member of their faculty, but still very, very active professionally. And he talked about when personhood begins. When does life begin? as a developmental biologist. Catherine Crouch was taught about a very interesting aspect of the biophysics of cell shape change. Carr Everbach, oh my gosh, I left off his topic, which is so important, to frack or not to frack. All right. Sorry about the cutting and pasting. And Deb Bergstrom actually had us doodle on paper and told us about the rules of doodling. And that was the very interactive one. And then finally, this last semester, Chris Vesey told us how our brain recognizes faces better than those casino models do. Eric was one of our speakers, telling us about how he and his students participate in this exciting challenge of discovering new planets and how that is done. Allison Holliday from chemistry talked about the good, bad, and the ugly of sides of pesticides. And finally, Lisa Meaden wrapped us up, telling us about where computers are better than our brains and where they're not so good. So we've had a 2-year run, and I'm really pleased that the Institute and the Foundation decided to fund us for 2 years. Here are my outcomes. First of all, between 60 and 80 people attended each session. The first day, we ran out of food because I lowballed it. I said to Stacy Kudish at the time, maybe 50 people. So we had sandwiches for 60. It turned out 80 people came. I got lots of enthusiastic emails from a lot of people. The representation in the audience was incredibly diverse. I just loved it. Every time we saw people from athletics, admissions, many academic departments, but not only the faculty, the administrative assistants and administrative coordinators came, librarians, people from facilities. It was really fabulous. I think it really did expand interest in science. There were lots more conversations, certainly, that involved science going on campus. And they also, people got a chance to see where the students were involved in our research. But the most important outcome, and one I didn't expect because I'm so short-sighted, was that this was a real community-building exercise. I heard people say, well, see you next month. Or, remember me, we sat together 2 months ago. New little friendships and reading circles have formed out of this, which was an unexpected side effect that I'm really hoping continues for a very long time. So I have lots of quotes. I'm not going to read them to you. What I want you to see is where they came from. One from public safety. One from communications. They do talk about getting their flu shot on the way home. I really talked about the importance of vaccines. Facilities and services. There's another flu shot one. I'm looking forward to schedule my first ever flu shot from someone in the administration who will remain nameless. Media services and ITS. So that's a representation of the number of different kinds of people who were involved. And so what's next? So the Second Tuesday Science Cafe has concluded formally. There is certainly room for science, for cafes in other divisions. I would love to see kind of an interdisciplinary theme, but I am stepping back and allowing other people to come forward. Many people have asked me about it, and I'm happy to share what I've learned. But I think the major thing is that we've lowered the barriers that prevent communication from happening on an easy basis. I've been stopped by a lot more people in the hallways and on the walkway saying, oh, you know what, that whole thing about hand washing was really interesting. Or, you know, you've got me to read more things in the Science Times of the New York Times. And those are just wonderful outcomes. We are a learning community. It shouldn't just be the students who are learning. The faculty know that we learn from our students, but we also learn a lot from the staff and the other people who really make this place run. So it's been quite a run, and I'm very happy to have had the support from the foundation. The people I want to thank are Stacy Kudish, who got me started, and she was the one who made me invite the faculty. And since that time, Stacy has left, and Pam Shropshire has been a superb logistician, helping me get everything ready and the publicity and all that kind of stuff and ordering lunch. And I want to thank the president and the provost and the foundation for taking a chance and lending their support to us. And I hope it's just another one of those crazy ideas that has a little bit longer lifetime than it officially does. I still am devoting myself to improving science literacy, and I'm just very pleased to have had this opportunity to share that with you. Thank you.